And we're back. This, once again, is Jim Santel, your host this morning, Morning Cannolis. In this portion of our second hour this morning, we're exploring issues related to the First Amendment and how those apply to students and teachers, parents, administrators, and all community members when it comes to education in America, specifically in public schools, what the Supreme Court has said about the First Amendment, the principle that we will underscore throughout the remainder of our time today and into our next broadcast on the 30th of July, a week from today, is this fundamental notion that when you are a student and when you are a teacher, you do not, in fact, shed your rights under the First Amendment. And the question is, what rights do you have? What things can a school do to advance its educational purpose without violating your rights? What kinds of things can a legislature impose, not impose, upon students and teachers in the academic setting? And so the Supreme Court has answered some, but plainly not all of those questions. Our exploration this morning, our discussion this morning, is all about what the parameters of that are all about. And so we talked right before the break about this case called Barnett, 1943, in which the Supreme Court said that a state can't require all public school students to salute the flag, cannot impose this obligation upon students to salute the flag and recite the Pledge of Allegiance. Jackson saying, once again, this is a fixed star in our constitutional constellation. And right before the break, we were chatting about these very, very important cases, still understood, if not by name, certainly by import, talking about the extent to which a school prayer and Bible reading, or the reading of any religious text, can be mandated in public schools. Again, different for private schools and different for other institutions that are not public in nature. In Engel versus Vitale, 1962, the Supreme Court says that you cannot mandate that students engage in prayer. I cannot stand up in the front of my British literature class or my physics class or my gym class and say, we are now all going to pray. That is prohibited. Likewise, I cannot say, let's all bring out our Bibles. I can't say, let's all bring out our Torahs, our Korans. We're going to read from those religious texts as a group. And that important distinction is one that I think is lost somewhat on the meaning of Vitale in this other case called Abington School District versus Shemp, because the answer is that while there cannot be organized, institutionalized prayer, cannot be organized, institutionalized reading of a religious text, can individual students, can individual teachers and administrators, if they choose to, in the quiet and the individuality of their own time, can they pray in school? Of course they can. Of course they can. In a study hall, in an appropriate circumstance, perhaps even quietly in a reading period, those kinds of things. They've got to be time and place specific, as we talked earlier, that time and place can be regulated. Traditionally, if I'm in the middle of a gym class, for example, and we're running 2 miles, that's probably not the time for me to ask for the right to prayer. But, for example, if there are other circumstances during the course of the day when my tradition, my religious tradition, calls upon me to pray or to read something from my religious book, I can do that individually without running afoul of the Supreme Court's directions in Engel versus Vitale and Abington versus Shemp. It is just the notion that a teacher organizing the class around prayer in a very organized and structured way, that can't happen under the Supreme Court's rulings under the First Amendment. That, once again, Engel versus Vitale and Abington versus School District. Individuals can still certainly pray. And so the extent that people say, you know, the Supreme Court threw prayer out of schools, out of public schools, prohibited the bringing into the school of a religious text, that's simply not true. You can still do that. You need to exercise those prerogatives under the Constitution in the quiet, if you will, and the privacy of your own individuality under the right circumstances that don't otherwise impact other students. It cannot be an organized type of activity in schools. And so consistent with those kind of general principles, in 1968, toward the end of the 1960s, another major case called Epperson versus Arkansas, 1968. The United States Supreme Court, again, doing a lot in this area of the intersection between freedom of speech exercise of religion, establishment of religion, which we've chatted about in previous broadcasts, trying to figure out where the parameters are in all this. And in Epperson versus Arkansas, the High Court, the United States Supreme Court, found a state law prohibiting the teaching of evolution in public schools. That's a violation of the Establishment Clause under the First Amendment. Lots to unpack there, right? So a freedom of exercise clause, a freedom of speech clause, but also Supreme Court says this is about the Establishment Clause, and if a state bans the teaching of evolution, that is in violation of the First Amendment. You've got to be able to have some liberties when it comes to the teaching of evolution. I think most people regard evolution as a scientific fact, and the notion that a legislature would prohibit that kind of teaching in the schools, that's a violation of the Establishment Clause under the First Amendment. Again, not exactly the expression, the free expression clause, but nonetheless in this general area, again, establishing this notion that we should be teaching things that are in the public domain, that do not implicate religion, and that do not establish a particular religious view in classrooms around America. That case, Epperson versus Arkansas, again, establishing this continuing movement toward public schools that do not have influence of religion. That can, in fact, and is part, can be a part of a private school institution, but not public schools, and that you do, in fact, have some continuing rights as a student and as a teacher under the First Amendment. Those cannot be infringed inside those institutions. And so that brings us, as we move into the last segment of our time together this morning, to what is perhaps the most important case of all when it comes to understanding this exercise of First Amendment rights inside the school setting. How far does it go? What are the limits of it? Do students have unbridled rights under the Constitution? What about teachers? Can they teach whatever they like? Can they do whatever they want when it comes to freedom of expression? And what are the limits of that? Well, in a case called Tinker versus Des Moines Independent Community School District, now we're at the very end of the 1960s. Again, the Supreme Court doing a lot about education and the First Amendment in the 1960s. The case is Tinker, T-I-N-K-E-R. The Supreme Court says this. This is language I'm going to repeat today and again in our next broadcast because it has implications broadly. It says this: it can hardly be argued that either students or teachers shed their constitutional rights to freedom of speech or expression at the schoolhouse gate. Okay? Again, sort of some double negatives there, if you will, but basically affirming that when you walk through the doors as a student, as a teacher, and probably the Supreme Court would also say that applies to administrators and to other people involved in the educational process, staff, certainly parents as well. When you walk through the schoolhouse gate, you do not shed your constitutional rights. They still attach to you. You still have a right of freedom of speech and expression under the First Amendment. That's 1969. That's a case called Tinker versus Des Moines Independent School District. Where did that come from? Well, school authorities in Des Moines had prohibited some students, and in particular, a young woman named Mary Beth Tinker. She was 13 years old at the time. In 1965, it took 4 years to the case to get to the Supreme Court. In 1965, a 13-year-old, again, obviously in the middle of the Vietnam War, had organized an in-school war protest against the Vietnam War. And she, in particular, had distributed armbands that she had put together that had the peace symbol on them, and distributed these armbands to her friends, other schoolmates in the classroom as a protest of the Vietnam War. She's in public school. So generally, again, the limits of the Supreme Court's ruling in other cases, they apply here that you do have rights under the First Amendment. And the school district, the Des Moines School District, had prohibited Mary Tinker and her schoolmates from wearing those black armbands in protest of the Vietnam War. This is way back in 1965, in the middle of the Vietnam War. And other symbols, including the Iron Cross, were, however, allowed at that time. So the Iowa school folks say, no, you can't do that. That's would be inhibiting the education process. Cannot go ahead and wear those bands, Ms. Tinker. We're prohibiting you from doing that. And right after the break, in our last moments of our time together today, we're going to chat more about what the Supreme Court said, what they did in Tinker, what their result was, what their lesson was to Mary Beth Tinker and to all of us to this day with respect to the rights of students in classes, in their schools, under the First Amendment to the United States Constitution. We're talking about all that here at the Shaw in Waukesha, 540 AM, 101 FM, taking your calls as well at 844-967-2789.